Who are happiest? And other stories. Who are happiest? What troubles you, William? Said Mrs. Aiken, speaking in a tone of kind concern to her husband, who sat silent and moody, with his eyes now fixed upon the floor, and now following the forms of his plainly clad children as they sported, full of health and spirits, about the room. It was evening, and Mr. Aiken, a man who earned his bread by the sweat of his brow, had, a little while before, returned from his daily labor. No answer was made to the wife's question. A few minutes went by, and then she spoke again. "Is anything wrong with you, William?" "Nothing more than usual," was replied. "There's always something wrong. The fact is, I'm out of heart." "William?" Mrs. Aiken came and stood beside her husband, and laid her hand gently upon his shoulder. The evil spirit of envy and discontent was in the poor man's heart, this his wife understood right well. She had often before seen him in this frame of mind. "I'm as good as Freeman, am I not?"
"Yes, and a great deal better, I hope," replied Mrs. Aiken.
"And yet he is rolling in wealth, while I, though compelled to toil early and late, can scarcely keep soul and body together."
"Hush, William. Don't talk so. It does you no good. We have a comfortable home, with food and raiment, let us therewith be contented and thankful.
Thankful for this mean hut. Thankful for hard labor, poor fare, and coarse clothing. None are so happy as those who labor, none enjoy better health than they who have only the plainest food. Do you ever go hungry to bed, William?"
"No, of course not."
"Do you or your children shiver in the cold of winter for lack of warm clothing?"
"No, but—"
"William, do not look past your real comforts in envy of the blessings God has given to others. Depend upon it, we receive all of this world's goods the kind Father above sees best for us to have. With more, we might not be so happy as we are."
"I'll take all that risk," said Mr. Aiken. "Give me plenty of money, and I'll find a way to largely increase the bounds of enjoyment. The largest amount of happiness, I believe, is ever to be found in that condition wherein God had placed us.
Then every poor man should willingly remain poor."
"I did not say that, William. I think every man should seek earnestly to improve his worldly affairs, yet, be contented with his lot at all times, for, only in contentment is there happiness, and this is a blessing the poor may share equally with the rich. Indeed, I believe the poor have this blessing in larger store. You, for instance, are a happier man than Mr. Freeman."
"I'm not so sure of that."
"I am, then. Look at his face. Doesn't that tell the story? Would you exchange with him in every respect?"
"No, not in every respect. I would like to have his money."
"Ah, William. William." Mrs. Aiken shook her head. "You are giving place in your heart for the entrance of bad spirits. Try to enjoy, fully, what you have, and you will be a far happier man than Mr. Freeman. Your sleep is sound at night."
"I know. A man who labors as hard as I do, can't help sleeping soundly."
"Then labor is a blessing, if for nothing else. I took home, today, a couple of aprons made for Mrs. Freeman. She looked pale and troubled, and I asked her if she were not well."
"Not very," she replied. "I've lost so much rest of late, that I'm almost worn out."
I did not ask why this was, but, after remaining silent for a few moments, she said, "Mr. Freeman has got himself so excited about business, that he sleeps scarcely 3 hours in the 24. He cares neither for eating nor drinking, and, if I did not watch him, would scarcely appear abroad in decent apparel. Hardly a day passes that something does not go wrong. Workmen fail in their contracts, prices fall below what he expected them to be, and agents prove unfaithful. In fact, 100 things occur to interfere with his expectations, and to cloud his mind with disappointment. We were far happier when we were poor, Mrs. Aiken. There was a time when we enjoyed this life. Bright days. How well are they remembered? Mr. Freeman's income was $12 a week, we lived in 2 rooms, and I did all our own work. I had fewer wants than I have ever had since, and was far happier than I ever expect to be again on this side of the grave." Just then a cry was heard in the street.
"Hark!" exclaimed Mr. Aiken.
"Fire! Fire! Fire!" The startling sound rose clear and shrill upon the air. Mr. Aiken sprang to the window and threw it open.
"Mr. Freeman's new building, as I live."
Mr. Aiken dropped the window, and catching up his hat, hurriedly left the house.
Mr. Aiken's return from the fire. It was an hour ere he returned. Meanwhile the fire raged furiously, and from her window, where she was safe from harm, Mrs. Aiken saw the large new factory, which the rich man had just erected, entirely consumed by the fierce, devouring element.
All in vain was it that the intrepid firemen wrought almost miracles of daring, in their efforts to save the building. Story after story were successively wrapped in flames, until, at length, over $50,000 worth of property lay a heap of black and smoldering ruins. Wet to the skin, and covered with cinders, was Mr. Aiken when he returned to his humble abode, after having worked manfully, in his unselfish efforts to rescue a portion of his neighbor's property from destruction. "Poor Freeman! I pity him from my very heart," was his generous, sympathizing exclamation, as soon as he met his wife. "He is insured, is he not?" inquired Mrs. Aiken. "Partially. But even a full insurance would be a poor compensation for such a loss. In less than 2 weeks, this new factory, with all its perfect and beautiful machinery, would have been in operation. The price of goods is now high, and Mr. Freeman would have cleared a handsome sum of money on the first season's product of his mill. It is a terrible disappointment for him. I never saw a man so much disturbed." "Poor man! His sleep will not be so sound as yours, tonight, William." "Indeed it will not. Nor, rich as he is, will he be as happy as you, tomorrow." "If I were as rich as he is," said Mr. Aiken, "I would not fret myself to death for this loss. I would, rather, be thankful for the wealth still left in my possession." Mrs. Aiken shook her head. "No, William, the same spirit that makes you restless and discontented now, would be with you, no matter how greatly improved might be your external condition. Mr. Freeman was once as poor as you are. Do you think him happier for his riches? Does he enjoy life more? Has wealth brought a greater freedom from care? Has it made his sleep sweeter? Far, very far from it. Riches have but increased the sources of discontent. This is not a necessary consequence. If Mr. Freeman turn a blessing into a curse, that is a defect in his particular case. And few, in this fallen and evil world, are free from this same defect, William. If wealth were sought for unselfish ends, then it would make its possessor happy. But how few so seek riches. It is here, believe me, that the evil lies." Mrs. Aiken spoke earnestly, and something of the truth that was in her mind, shed its beams upon the mind of her husband. "You remember," said she smiling, "the anecdote of the rich man of New York, who asked a person who gave utterance to words of envy towards himself, 'Would you,' said he, 'take all the care and anxiety attendant upon the management of my large estates and extensive business operations, merely for your victuals and clothes?' 'No, indeed, I would not,' was the quick answer. 'I get no more,' said the rich man, gravely. And it was the truth, William. They who get rich in this world, pass up through incessant toil and anxiety, and, while they seem to enjoy all the good things of life, in reality enjoy but little. They get only their victuals and clothes. I have worked for many rich ladies, and I do not remember one who appeared to be happier than I am. And I am mistaken if your experience is not very much like my own." One evening, a few days after this time, Aiken came home from his work. As he entered the room where his wife and children sat, the former looked up to him with a cheerful smile of welcome, and the latter gathered around him, filling his ears with the music of their happy voices. The father drew an arm around one and another, and, as he sat in their midst, his heart swelled in his bosom, and warmed with a glow of happiness. Soon the evening meal was served, by the hands of his wife, the good angel of his humble home. William Aiken, as he looked around upon his smiling children, and their true-hearted, even-tempered, cheerful mother, felt that he had many blessings for which he should be thankful. "I saw something, a little while ago, that I shall not soon forget," said he, when alone with his wife.
"What was that, William?"
"I had occasion to call at the house of Mr. Elder, on some business, as I came home this evening. Mr. Elder is rich, and I have often envied him, but I shall do so no more. I found him in his sitting room, alone, walking the floor with a troubled look on his face. He glanced at me with an impatient expression as I entered. I mentioned my business, when he said abruptly and rudely, 'I've no time to think of that now.' As I was turning away, a door of the room opened, and Mrs. Elder and two children entered. 'I wish you would send those children up to the nursery,' he exclaimed, in a fretful, half-angry voice. 'I'm in no humor to be troubled with them now.' The look cast upon their father by those two innocent little children, as their mother pushed them from the room, I shall not soon forget. I remembered, as I left the house, that there had been a large failure in Market Street, and that Mr. Elder was said to be the loser by some $10,000, less than a 20th part of what he is worth. I am happier than he is tonight, Mary."
"And happier you may ever be, William," returned his wife, "if you but stoop to the humble flowers that spring up along your pathway, and, like the bee, take the honey they contain. God knows what, in external things, is best for us, and He will make either poverty or riches, whichsoever comes, a blessing, if we are humble, patient and contented. Dick Lawson. And the Young Mockingbird.
Dick.
Sir. I want a young mockingbird. Can't you get me one?
I'd know, sir.
Don't you think you could try?
I'd know, sir. Perhaps I might.
Well, see if you can't. I'll give you $0.50 for one.
Will you?
Then I'll try. And off Dick started for the woods, without stopping for any further words on the subject. The two individuals introduced are a good-natured farmer in easy circumstances, and a bright boy, the son of a poor woman in the neighborhood. As Dick Lawson was hurrying away for the woods, his mind all intent upon finding a nest of young mockingbirds, and despoiling it, he met a juvenile companion, named Henry Jones.
"Come, Harry," said he, in an animated voice, "I want you to go with me."
"Where are you going?" asked the friend.
"I am going to look for a mockingbird's nest."
"What for?"
"To get a young one. Mr. Akers said he would give me $0.50 for a young mockingbird."
"He did?"
"Yes, he did so," was the animated reply. "But don't he know that it's wrong to rob birds' nests?"
"If it had been wrong, Harry, Mr. Akers wouldn't have asked me to get him a bird. He knows what is right and wrong, as well as anybody about here.
And so does Mr. Millman, our Sunday school teacher, and he says that it is wicked to rob birds' nests. You know he has told us that a good many times.
But Mr. Akers knows what is right as well as Mr. Millman, and if it had been wrong, he'd never have asked me to get him a bird. And then, you know, he says he will give me $0.50 for a single one."
"I wouldn't touch a bird's nest for $10, rejoined Henry Jones, warmly.
"I would then," replied Dick, from whose mind the promised reward had, for the time, completely dispelled every tender impression received both from his mother, who had been very careful of her child, and his teacher at the Sunday school. "But come," he added, "you'll go with me, anyhow."
"Not, if you are going to rob a bird's nest," firmly responded Henry. "It is wicked to do so."
"Wicked? I don't see anything so very wicked about it. Mr. Akers is a good man, so everybody says, and I know he wouldn't tell me to do a wicked thing."
"I'm sure it is wicked," persevered Henry Jones, "for isn't it taking the poor little birds from their mother? Don't you think it would be wicked for some great giant to come and carry your little sister away off where you could never find her, and shut her up in a cage, and keep her there all her life?"
"No, but birds are not little children. It's a very different thing. But you needn't talk, Harry, for it's no use. If you'll go along, you shall have half the money I get for the bird. If not, why, I'll go myself and keep the whole of it."
"I wouldn't go with you for $100, said Harry half indignantly, turning away.
"Then I'll go myself," was Dick Lawson's sneering reply, as he sprang forward and hurried off to the woods. He did not, however, feel very easy in mind, although he attempted first to whistle gaily, and then to sing. The remonstrance of Henry Jones had its effect in calling back previous better feelings, awakened by the precepts of a good mother and the instructions of a judicious Sabbath school teacher. To oppose these, however, were the direct sanction of Mr. Akers, towards whom he had always been taught to look with respect, and the stimulating hope of a liberal reward. These were powerful incentives, but they could not hush the inward voice of disapprobation, that seemed to speak in a louder and sterner tone with every advancing step. Still, this voice, loud as it was, could not make him pause or hesitate. Onward he pursued his way, and soon entered the woods and old fields he had fixed in his mind as the scene of his operations. An hour's diligent search ended in the discovery of a nest, in which were two young ones, with the mother bird feeding them. This sight softened Dick's heart for a moment, but the strong desire, instantly awakened, to possess the prize for which he had been seeking, caused him to drive off the old bird, who commenced fluttering about the spot, uttering cries and showing signs of deep distress. These, although he could not help feeling them, did not cause him to desist. In a few moments he had one of the birds safely in his possession, with which he bounded off in great delight.
"Well, Dick, have you got my bird?" said Mr. Akers, as Dick came puffing and blowing into his presence.
"Yes, indeed," returned Dick with a broad smile of pleasure, presenting the bird he had abstracted from its warm, soft nest.
"You are a fine smart boy, Dick, and will make a man one of these days," said Mr. Akers, patting Dick on the head encouragingly. Then, taking the bird, he toyed with it for a while fondly, fed it, and finally placed it in a cage. The promised $0.50, which was promptly paid to the lad, made him feel rich.
As he was about leaving the house of Mr. Akers, the latter called to him.
"Look here, Dick, my fine fellow, don't you want a dog? Here's Rover, the very chap for you."
"May I have Rover?" eagerly asked Dick, his eyes glistening with delight.
"Yes. I've more dogs now than I want.
He fights well," ejaculated Dick, surveying the dog proudly. As he did so, the animal, seeing himself noticed, walked up to Dick, and rubbed himself against the lad familiarly.
"He'll whip any dog in the neighborhood," said Mr. Akers.
"And you'll give him to me?"
"Oh, yes. I've got too many dogs now.
Here, Rover. Here, Rover. Here. Here. Here," cried Dick in an animated tone, starting off. The dog followed quickly, and in a few moments both were out of sight.
"A smart chap that," remarked Mr. Akers to himself, as Dick bounded away. "He'll make something before he dies, I'll warrant."
The possession of the dog and half dollar, especially the latter, were strongly objected to by Dick's mother.
"How could you, my son, think of robbing a poor bird of her little young ones?" said she seriously and reprovingly.
"But, mother, Mr. Akers wanted me to get him a bird, and of course I could not say no. What would he have thought of me?
You never should do wrong for anyone."
"But if it had been so very wrong, Mr. Akers never would have asked me to do it, I know," urged Dick.
Mrs. Lawson would have compelled her son to take back the money he had received, if almost any other person in the village but Mr. Akers had been concerned. But he was well off, and influential, and, moreover, was her landlord, and, though she was behindhand with her rent, he never took the trouble to ask for it. The dog, too, would have been sent back if anyone but Mr. Akers had given it to her son. As it was, she contented herself with merely reprimanding Dick for robbing the bird's nest, and enjoining on him not to be guilty of so cruel an act again. About 3 days after this event,